Good morning. Recently, I received an email from a good friend, Susan, out in California. And she had attended the classes out there. She reminded me of a talk I had given using or quoting parts of this book called Consciousness Transformed, or the 1963-64 Hawaii Hotel Talks by Joel Goldsmith. Now, this book is hard to, well, it used to be hard to locate, but I think maybe Acropolis Books is printing them again. I'm not sure. Anyway, you can do a search on Amazon and find it, or wherever you go for your books, Barnes & Noble. These are the last talks that Joel ever gave before he passed on to teach from the invisible. And they are some of the deepest he ever gave, because they are lifting the students from metaphysics into mysticism. And that was his goal, as he said himself, in this book and in other places. Now, let me read you something from Virginia Stevenson, who wrote the introduction to this book. Virginia Stevenson was, of course, one of his students, which herself, at his prompting, became a teacher. And I attended one of her classes up in Tennessee. At any rate, I also attended one of her classes way, way back in the 70s in Pasadena, California. But at any rate, she says here, Joel wrote to many of us, that is, us students, that until we assimilated what was given in the lessons of July 14th through September 30th of 1963, until we assimilated those lessons, he could not take us further into mystical awareness. And I have those chapters bookmarked, because I feel that Joel himself said they were important and you needed to assimilate those chapters. And the first one, on July 14th of 1963, is called Removing the Veil. Now let's talk about that for a minute, shall we? What is the veil? What is the veil, and what is the veil covering? I can explain it in this way, or it was given to me in this way. When Jesus was speaking to the Father just before he was to pass into the invisible and continue his teaching there, he said, Father, glorify thou me with the glory that I had with thee before the world was. Each of you, individually, had that glory with the Father before the world was. But you lost your experience of that glory when you entered a world. You lost the experience, the demonstration of that glory when you entered the world. And so the veil must be the world, the senses that show you a world where there is no glory of the Father. And removing that veil will reveal to you the glory you had with the Father before the world was. And so, when Joel gives the title to a chapter called Removing the Veil, he is talking about removing the veil of the sense world in which you may find yourself. And he starts by saying, good afternoon. Almost everybody comes to the study of the infinite way for the loaves and fishes. Only rarely does anyone come to learn the truth of life. But sooner or later, those who remain in this message are forced into making a decision. Choose ye this day whom ye will serve, God or demonstration. Seeking God or seeking through God to get more and better human good. As we seek and discover the kingdom of God, things are added unto us on the spiritual path, but by then we are no longer interested in the things. Why? Because the things are this world. If you're seeking greater income monthly or annually, which you've termed supply, so it sounds more spiritual, then you are seeking something of this world. If you are seeking companionship, well, that's what you call it, companionship, but really you want a companion, that he or that she that's just right, then you are seeking something of this world. If you are seeking spiritual health, which really means to you a healthy body, a body that can move around and do things and is not in pain and doesn't need medicine, of course you are seeking again something of this world. And on this path, Joel says, if you stick with the principles of the infinite way, the day will come when you must make the decision to either continue to attempt to demonstrate these trinkets, or to demonstrate God, or to seek only God. In other words, to seek what is behind the veil. And so he begins to give us some hints and clues. Now I can tell you, listening to this talk, even reading this chapter, even meditating on this chapter, or pondering it, let's say, will not remove the veil for you. All of that is an intellectual exercise. But nevertheless, he's going to give you hints at what might be behind the veil. But until you have the experience, you step into the experience of that which is behind the veil, well, it's all an intellectual exercise and really won't avail you much of anything. But when you do seek that which is behind the veil and enter into it, and it enters into you, then you know God aright. And so he's going to hint at some of these things. And he says, we learn that Moses put a veil on truth and Jesus Christ removed it. But remember, if Moses placed a veil on truth, it must have been unveiled when it came into his possession or awareness. And of course it was. Moses received his earliest training in Egypt, and while he did not receive truth there, now truth as he's using it in this sentence means that which is behind the veil, while he did not receive truth there in Egypt, eventually he was turned in the right direction so that truth could be revealed to him at the right moment. But Because it was revealed, it enabled him to be the means through which the Hebrews were taken out of slavery and brought into the Promised Land. He veiled the truth from the people, perhaps because of some early experience in trying to reveal it, or because his Egyptian training had convinced him that truth should be veiled. So, Moses discovered the glory he had with the Father before the world was, but he veiled it from those he was teaching. Many Hebrew prophets between Moses and Jesus discovered the truth, but there is no known record of any of them, with the possible exception of Isaiah, making an effort to reveal to the people the secret. Jesus removed the veil, and he was crucified for doing it. Authority, whether in the church or in the government, did not rest well if the people knew the truth. And that's pretty obvious why. If a government is trying to control its people and convincing them that they are sinners and they need the government's help to please God, if the Hebrews of those days were teaching that you needed to sacrifice animals before God and you needed to do this and that, and what would happen if somebody came along and said, none of that is necessary? You had a glory with the Father before the world was, and you still have it, and here's how you experience it. And this is your real Father, and the government should be on his shoulders. Well, that would take away the control. It would take away the power. It would take away everything from the government or the religion or the priests or the prophets of that time, would it not? And so, oh, we can't have that. No, no, we must put a stop to this. And therefore, Jesus removed the veil and he was crucified for doing it. Now, Joel says, that condition does not exist at the present time. The church today is as eager to know the truth as the people are. It is very much aware that at the moment it has not found truth. Now, the moment of his, let's see, this was July of 1963, and we are standing in March of 2014, so we are well over a year, I mean, well over 50 years since he made this statement. And I leave it to you to decide whether you feel that the statement is true today, that the church is eager to know the truth. Anyway, he says, Jesus unveiled the truth, and then it was veiled again, and has remained so, except in isolated instances and with very small groups. Egypt knew this truth several thousand years before Christ, and Gautama the Buddha revealed this truth, but it was lost while he was still living on earth. 700 years later, Shankara rediscovered the truth in Buddha's teaching and revealed it in what is called Advaita, or Advaita Vedanta. The only remnant of this teaching today is in one ashram located in India. Jesus discovered the truth and he unveiled it, but it was lost rapidly after the crucifixion. About 100 years later, John rediscovered it and revealed it in the Gospel of John. Now, 50 years ago, a man named Joel discovered it. Well, he discovered it a lot. Let's see, about almost 100 years ago, but standing over 50 years ago, standing in this hotel and giving this talk, he revealed it to the rest of us. He gave hints so that you might find it. Now, is it going to be lost again? Or are there small groups of people that are going to find it again? I don't know. He says here about one half of the Protestant authorities are in favor of removing the Gospel of John from the Bible. Well, John, of course, was the most advanced disciple, and he rediscovered the glory that he had with the Father before the world was. He told us about it and how to find it in Revelation. Now, these things have been on earth for thousands of years. The book of John has been around for thousands of years. It's been in print, what? How many? Was it the 1400s? So it's been in print about 600 or 700 years. So that every man can read it. So then why are the people, the masses that read it, quote from it in Sunday school, why are they not peeking behind the veil? Why are they not stepping behind the veil? Why are they not experiencing the glory that they had with the Father before the veil? The reason is, you know, probably already, the truth can never be learned through the mind. Truth must be discerned through spiritual faculties. The natural man, the mind, receiveth not the things of God, for they are foolishness unto him. And he cannot know them, because they are spiritually discerned. Therefore, without spiritual discernment, it is impossible to read either the Gospel of John or the Advaita Vedanta and understand its unfoldment or comprehend its meaning. So there you have it. And why would the natural man or the mind not be able to, how did he phrase it here? Not be able to learn the truth. Why would the mind not to be able to experience truth? Let's just put it out there. The mind, the human mind, cannot experience truth. Why? Well, we said that the veil is the sense world. The world as perceived through the senses. And the senses perceiving are the mind. So the mind itself is the veil. Again, we go to beyond words and thoughts, and we read, the ascension is always the same, rising above the mind, rising above knowing the truth, to being the truth. And so, stepping behind the veil, knowing the glory you had with the Father before the world was, is knowing your own infinite being without the veil of the mind. It's very esoteric, isn't it? You can see why Jesus would take someone into a cave and work with them all night as part of an initiation. And so to continue, in this very first chapter of the ones that we are told we must assimilate, He says, let us ponder some of the messages of Christ Jesus, because this is the Buddhist finger pointing at the moon. Now remember, the Buddhist says, people look and the monk points at the moon, the Zen master points at the moon, and they look at the finger and not the moon. And so don't look at these words, which are the finger. Don't look at these hints. Look behind the veil at the moon. My kingdom is not of this world. My peace give I unto you, not as the world giveth. Take no thought for your life, what ye shall eat or what ye shall drink, nor yet for your body, what ye shall put on. Think of those combined statements and realize how, if you want to know the unveiled truth, if you want to step behind the veil, if you want to know the glory you had with the Father before the world was, you must first abandon all thoughts or prayers for your life. Well, so that's all there is to it. We can put the book away now. We can stop. We can turn off the recorder or turn off the MP3 player, because now we have the answer. All we have to do to step behind the veil is stop using the mind to understand truth and abandon all thoughts or prayers for your life. And that's it. Simple. And if you do that, you... Okay, there's a little more. But if you do that, what he's suggesting there, what he's hinting at, will eventuate in an experience, an internal experience of peeking behind the veil. I know we've heard it 1,000 times. Let's hear it again. The experience at first is like watching the world disappear over a horizon and drop down from before us. The veil drops. There is no attachment to this world, and no desire to hold on to it, probably because, to a great extent, this experience does not come until a great measure of our desire for the things of this world has been overcome. And when this world disappears over a horizon and we are standing behind the veil, he says, at first, we cannot speak of it. There is a sense of, touch me not, for I have not yet ascended. I am still between the two worlds. Do not touch me or make me speak of it, because it may put the veil back up. Let me be free to rise, and when I am completely free of the veil, and when I'm standing in the glory I had with the Father before the world was, I will tell you of many things which eyes have not seen, nor ears heard. This is the first glimpse behind the veil, according to Joel. Now, can you all see that this is an initiation? This is not an intellectual understanding, something you can agree with in the mind. Oh, this is much, much deeper than that. And so he says, Think of those combined statements and realize how, if you want to know the unveiled truth, you must first abandon all thoughts or prayers for your life. You must stop. Stop seeking material things. Everyone in the world is seeking peace. What kind of peace? Well, the peace that this world can give. But my peace is something, well, something behind the veil. Or let us take this statement. God is a spirit, and they that worship him must worship him in spirit and in truth. If you are seeking the unveiled truth or the unveiling, you must ask yourself, how do I worship in spirit? How do I pray spiritually? You will see very quickly that worshiping spiritually or praying spiritually has nothing to do with the things of this world. You know, there's an experience spoken of in the Bible when Mary goes to the tomb. She goes to the tomb expecting to find her master, her teacher, expecting to find a man who can teach her. But to her amazement, the veil has been lifted, or the stone has been rolled away from the tomb. And looking in, she does not see Jesus. She sees no man at all. Suddenly there is a presence behind her, and she turns and she says, "Oh, please tell me, where have you laid my teacher?" Thinking that her teacher is a man, something of this world. She's standing before the infinite Christ. Does not know it. "Oh, where have you lain, my master? Tell me, and I'll come get the body." Ready to settle for something from this world. The veil is lifted. She's staring into the infinite. And the infinite answers with one word. "Mary." Oh my God, she falls to her knees. "Master." And I have a picture here on my wall with his hand outstretched saying, "Rise. Rise." You can see it. He's standing before the tomb and Mary's in awe on her knees. She's staring into infinity at the living Christ. Of course she's in awe. The veil has been lifted. "Touch me not. I have not yet ascended." She's staring at the glory she had with the world, with the God before the world was. Staring at the glory of Christ. And so you must stand in that glory in order to worship God correctly. You must stand in that glory in order to know God aright. But when you know God aright, you know the glory you had with the Lord before the world was. You know life eternal. You know the isness. The woman at the well of Samaria says, "You Hebrews say we must worship in Jerusalem." But to this the Christ says, "Henceforth you will not worship in Jerusalem, nor in holy mountains." And if you want the unveiled truth, my friends, Joel says, you must ask yourself, "Where shall I worship? Where shall I pray?" And I tell you, You must stand in the glory you had with the Lord before the world was. Eventually, says Joel, you will discover this. Since the kingdom of God is within you, your praying and your worshiping must be done there, within you. But not within your mind. Oh no, there's another within. Another within, behind that veil of the mind. This takes our attention away from this world and the things of this world. And it also eliminates all human saviors or masters and makes them teachers and wayshowers. And that's what I was going to say. Mary says, where have you taken my Lord? But when she stares into the infinite, and when you know the glory you had with the Lord before the world was, it eliminates all human saviors or masters and makes them just teachers, just someone pointing at the moon. Eventually you will come back to that which was taught in Egypt, that which was discovered by Moses, Gautama the Buddha, Jesus of Nazareth, Shankara, and that is, I am that I am. This is the teaching that you will find all the way from Genesis right up to Shankara, and repeated since then by every mystic, or from Genesis to Revelation, from Moses to Shankara. I am that I am. I and my Father are one. God the Father, God the Son, one. And so you have revealed to you why you must go within. If you are to worship in spirit and in truth, you must worship the presence of God that is within, or that is behind the veil. The presence of God is within you. The Master not only discovered the presence of God within himself and within his disciples, he also discovered it in the woman taken in adultery and the thief on the cross. There is no one exempt from the relationship of oneness. Thou seest me, thou seest the Father that sent me. And if you have something more than the mind, if you have spiritual discernment, if you see through spiritual eyes, you will know the kingdom of God is within me. And when you have discovered this, it will just be one more step to the realization that God has no stepchildren. Where you are now, in consciousness, whether rich, poor, educated, uneducated, sick, or well, the kingdom of God is already established behind that veil. The glory you had with the Father before the world was is already behind that veil right now, right here. So, the name of the Father had been known to Moses, but he did not reveal it to his followers. Only the high priests were permitted to know the name, and this is what constitutes the veil. The veil is always on the truth as long as you do not know the name of God. Or we might as well say it, the veil is on the truth for you if you do not know, if you do not have the experience of the glory you had with the Father before the world was, right now. And Joel says it's impossible to read books and discover it, even though it is hinted there. Certainly, it's in the Bible from Genesis to Revelation, but few have discovered that in that book. And the reason is that it is veiled. The name of God is not veiled. The veil is in the midst, the mist that covers your eyes. And this veil can be removed only through spiritual discernment. And so the entire secret of life is the unveiling of the name of God. Now don't walk around and say, well, I know the name of God, it's I. Because I read it in one of those infinite way books, or I saw it in the Bible, or I read the Advaita Vedanta. No, don't go around saying that, because you don't know it. If you knew it, then you would be standing behind the veil instead of standing over on this side of the veil in this world. Now, I don't mean that you're going to disappear. You're not. You're going to stand right where you are. The veil will be lifted. The veil of this world will disappear. And you will be standing behind the veil. You will be standing, staring into the infinite, and the infinite will be moving through you. And you will have the experience of the glory that you had with the Father before the veil came down. This is your initiation, and you are passing through it and in it right now. And if you know what I speak of, you are in the midst of this initiation. At the well of Samaria, the master offered the woman water, saying, whosoever drinketh of the water that I shall give him shall never thirst again. But he does it in a strange way. I am not offering you water, but if you ask me, I will give it to you. Later, his disciples came to him at the well of Samaria, and noticing he had not eaten, said, shall we go into the city and get some meat? No, I have meat to eat that ye know not of. Know ye not, thou seest me, thou seest the Father that sent me? I and the Father are one. Before Abraham was, I am. I know I am going to be crucified and leave you, but still I am going to say to you, I will be with you even unto the end of the world. Now, my friends, stop reading these words as if the thinking and pondering of these words has power. All power, all knowledge, all presence is behind that veil. When the veil is lifted, at first there is the experience of, where have you taken my Lord? Here I've been relying on these words, this person, this teacher, this teaching, this book, these books. It's a bit disconcerting. Where have you taken my master? Now what? Now what do I do? But if you listen from behind that veil, a voice will speak. Perhaps a still small voice. And it will call you. And it will say, I am the resurrection. Enter ye in. And you will experience the glory you had with the Father before the veil was put down over your eyes. And standing there in the infinite and the infinite in you, you will know. You will feel the resurrection. You will feel the ascension. You will know what very, very, very few on this earth over tens of thousands of years have ever known. And you will feel, touch me not. I still must make this a permanent consciousness. When you learn this identity, says Joel, and the veil is removed for you, something very sacred comes into your life. It is something which, because of its sacredness, you will want to keep holy and secret. You will never reveal it to the ignorant or the gross. You will not throw these pearls before swine. You will regard it a treasure for which you can well afford to give up all you have. Many people really believe that truth should be free, but the Master did not think so. Sell all that thou hast for this treasure. Leave all, even father, mother, brother, sister. It is worth it. Now this is Joel standing in the glory he had with the Father before the world was. Standing there in the ascension. Read his books. Read what he says. In the year 1963, he went through the crucifixion, the resurrection, and the ascension. And then he was instructed to lift up the students. So he's standing there in the invisible behind the veil saying, come, come on, follow me. He's standing there in his true Christ identity. And Christ in the invisible behind the veil within him, within you, the same, one and the same, Christ says, come, follow me into the invisible. Here, where I am, without taking thought, I am in God. I and God, God and I, one. This kingdom is within you, and a king is never outside of his kingdom. And God, being omnipresence, cannot get outside his kingdom. Because there is no way for God to escape out of you. He is locked up tightly because of oneness, and that one cannot be divided. It is indivisible. It is invisible. It is inseparable, but one. And I is that one. Therefore, to worship in spirit and in truth, to pray the prayer of the righteous man that availeth much means to go within and pass behind the veil while standing right here or sitting right here and leave all desires outside. No longer are we going into a Walmart, he says. We're going in to tabernacle and commune, well, with the glory we had with the Father before the world was, before the veil came down. And if we are wise, we will do this many times each day. 10 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes is sufficient. And then, as time passes, we discover we are going within for 2-3 minutes, and later, even for longer periods. But at present, it is enough if 20 times a day I can close my eyes and feel, well, I'm going to say something. I'm not going to put a label on it, because then your mind will attach a concept. You don't need any more concepts. This practice will become second nature. And when it does, in your initiation, you are ready for a further step. A step that can lead to wonders. In this step, in this further step, we no longer live by might or by power, but by grace, where we live without taking thought, where we live by thy Spirit. And this step entails this. You must find a period of the day, early in the morning, or after your family has retired at night, where you can sit down quietly and peacefully and feel the Father within, the I that I am, and know it can teach me, instruct me, guide me, lead me, protect me, speak to me, all through the still small voice. Let me tell you something about yourself, Joel says. He can't contain himself. This I that is within you was there before you had a form, before you had a figure. Yes, this I was there in the glory with the Father before the world was. It sent you forth into expression. You would have been aware of it from the moment of conception had your parents known the truth. You would have come forth not as a creature, but as a child of God. In other words, the entire generation of mortality is done away with. Yes, you must know that when you're standing behind the veil, experiencing the glory you had with the Father before the world was, this veil of mortality, this mortal life, is being dissolved and dissolved and dissolved. Now we realize, I, in the midst of me, sent me forth into expression. This presence which I feel within me is responsible for my being on earth. And the only reason I've ever had problems is because I have been trying to run my own life. But now I begin to die daily, the moment that I begins to be born within me. The moment I acknowledge and really know I within me, in the midst of me, is God. I am is God. Do you not see why in the 15th chapter of John it is found, if you abide in me and I abide in you consciously, and if you abide in this word you will bear fruit richly? Yes, the time comes when you recognize the Father is living my life. Or Paul's, I live yet not I, Christ liveth in me. I is living its life through me, and it's not good, it's not bad, it's immortal, it's divine, it's perfection. You reach the place of neither good nor evil, just Spirit. Just being, God, without any qualities. Think how it changes your nature and the nature of your prayer when you stop, when you stop looking out, but you close your eyes and gently look within and feel. And he's got a period there. It's not you feel thus or so. Close your eyes gently, look within, and feel. And so that is, for the most part, the chapter called Removing the Veil. And it is the first chapter of the section which Joel says we must assimilate before we can move further on the path of initiation. And now, let us look at this John chapter 15. Last week we looked at John chapter 14. This week we'll look at chapter 15, because Joel mentions it, and it just seems the right thing to do. And so, along the lines of looking behind the veil and experiencing the glory you had with the Father before the world was, imagine Mary looking into the infinite. Imagine yourself. The veil has been lifted. You are in awe. You look into the infinite invisible, and you hear this. I am the true vine, and the Father is the husbandman. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away. And every branch that beareth fruit, he purgeth it, that it may bring forth more fruit. Now ye are clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. And so you're staring into the infinite, and you hear that voice say, I am the vine. The Father is the husbandman. And you are a branch. You will bear much fruit. And when you bear much fruit, you will be purged. It's just exactly what we just said a moment ago, not even knowing that we were going to read this here. And that is, when you stand in the invisible, mortality is dissolved. Some part of mortality is dissolved. And you bear more fruit. Fruit of what? Fruit of the Spirit. Not more things. Fruit of the Spirit. You bear more fruit. People with vision can look at you and see some of that glory that you had with the Father before the veil shining forth. And so Mary looks into the invisible, and you in your silence, when you stop, you look into the invisible, and you hear, abide in me. Abide in me, in the infinite invisible. And I abide in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself, except it abides in the vine, no more can ye, except ye abide in me. I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me, and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me, ye can do nothing. This is that sense of humility that is true and perfect humility. It's not a false sense of humility. It's not walking around and beating yourself over the head. Oh, I'm nothing. I'll never be anything. I'm just no good. No, that's another entrapment of the mind. That's just more of the veil. But looking behind the veil, looking into the infinite, perhaps standing in the infinite, perhaps following these words and abiding in that I, in that me, and that I am abiding in you, then you know true humility, that without this invisible I, ye can do nothing. If a man abide not in me, He is cast forth as a branch, and is withered, and men gather them, and cast them into the fire, and they are burned. If ye abide in me, and my words abide in you, ye shall ask what ye will, and it shall be done. Herein is my Father glorified, that ye bear much fruit. So shall ye be my disciples. And so, if you turn within and stand in that invisible presence, and you experience the veil lifted, you experience the initiation of the resurrection, of the ascension, then you know the glory you had with the Father before the world was, and the Father is glorified because you are showing forth that glory. And standing there, you are a disciple of the infinite. Standing there, you are finally able to say, I follow the infinite way. I walk the infinite way. Up until then, you thought it was a man, or a teaching, or a series of talks, or tapes, or books, or a fellowship. It was none of those. The infinite way is what happens to you when the veil is lifted and you stand in the infinite. Then you are disciples of the Christ, not the Christ of 2,000 years ago or the Christ in a Bible. Then you are the disciple of the living Christ. I will give you living water. You are a disciple of the living Christ. As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Continue ye in my love. If ye keep my commandments, ye shall abide in my love, even as I have kept my Father's commandments, and abide in his love. These things have I spoken unto you, that my joy might remain in you, and that your joy might be full. Now he's telling you up here to keep his commandments, and if you do, God's love which is in him will be the love which abides in you. The infinite love will abide in you if you keep this commandment. And here it is. This is my commandment, that ye love one another as I have loved you. And greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. And so this is the commandment, as you stare into the invisible, and you stand behind the veil, you peek behind the veil, and you hear the infinite say, keep this commandment. Lay down your personal sense of self, and let I live you. Greater love has no one than he or she that does this. Lay down your life that I may live, that the infinite may function. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. And so this is my commandment. Do this. You are my friends if you do this. Henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth, but I call you friends, for all things that I have heard of my Father I have made known unto you. Yes. Yes, Joel says, live life as a witness, a beholder. And you are the friends, the disciple of the infinite. The infinite lives through you, and you bear witness. And again, staring into the invisible, standing in the glory you had with the Father before there was a veil, you hear. You have not chosen me. I have chosen you and ordained you that you should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatsoever ye shall ask of my Father in my name, he may give it to you. And of course, Joel says you may pray for anything you want, so long as it is not of this world. These things I command you, that ye love one another. How do you love one another? A man laid down his personal sense of life, that the infinite may flow, that the glory that you had before there was a world formed, that glory may flow forth. And now I want you to hear from the Advaita Vedanta, just a small section. You do not consist of any of the elements, earth, water, fire, air, or even the ether. To be liberated, to know freedom, or to peek behind the veil, know yourself as consisting of consciousness, or the witness of all of these. If you will remain resting in consciousness, seeing yourself distinct from body, then you will become happy, peaceful, and free. You see? Everyone is telling you, you're in the middle of an initiation. Again, it says, your real nature is as one perfect, free, actionless consciousness. You are the all-pervading witness, unattached to anything, desireless, at peace. Meditate on yourself as motionless awareness, free from duality. You have long been trapped in the snare of identification with the body, or with the senses, or with the mind, or with the veil. Sever it, or lift it with the knife of knowledge that I am awareness. You are unconditioned and changeless, formless and immovable, unfathomable awareness. Hold to nothing but consciousness. And so we can see that the Advaita Vedanta that Shankara, who made many of these quotes, or many of these quotes are of Shankara's talking, we can see that he was standing in that same place that Joel was, and Joel was quite fond of Shankara. He was standing in the same place behind the veil, teaching from there, as was Jesus, teaching from behind the veil. Now, says Jesus, I am no longer in the world. I am not in the world. I have overcome the world. I am behind the veil, he tells you. And he was there before the crucifixion. Now, says Joel, it's not easy to stop seeing human beings, but I finally made it. When you are in the spirit, says Joel, the invisible reality of an individual is all you can see. And I myself, says Joel, have beheld that reality dozens and dozens and dozens of times. We must know the incorporeality of someone to know them aright, says Joel. Can you not see he was standing in that invisible, experiencing the glory he had with the Father before the world was, and teaching from there in these talks made in Hawaii from 1963 to 64? Did he not tell you this plainly when he says in 1963? Let's look at it. I'm going to find that. Interestingly enough, this chapter is in Beyond Words and Thoughts in 1963 is called Truth Unveiled. So it's similar to the name of the chapter we just read in Consciousness Transformed. But here he says in 1963, while he's giving these talks, he says, in many classes, and even in some of the writings, I have said that I did not understand the reason for the crucifixion of Jesus, why it took place, or why it had to take place if it had to. It puzzled me, and I have frankly admitted this. It was not until the year 1963, when I myself went through the crucifixion, that the reason and need for the crucifixion of Christ Jesus was revealed to me. Somehow, after that experience, the memory of it passed from me, and I could not bring it to conscious recollection until later the entire scene was revealed to me again when I went through the experience of ascension, that rising above mind to truth itself. Or he went behind the veil and stood in the experience of the glory he had with the Father before the world was. That, my dear friends, is an initiation. And he says plainly right here, he went through the initiation. And then he was told to lift the students from metaphysics to mysticism, and he immediately undertook that. And he gave these talks from 1963 to 64. And then he passed from the visible into the invisible, where he teaches to this day, for those that have ears to hear. And I tell you, if you, who are also going through this initiation, move behind that veil into the invisible, you may hear some of his teaching, some of his classes. So, today we have covered the very first chapter that he says we have to assimilate, called Removing the Veil. We are in an initiation. This is the first class he gave, which he said must be assimilated for us to go behind the veil. And so you must assimilate what we covered today. I don't care if you have to listen to this a couple of times, or it's even three or four, but you must assimilate this chapter before we go forward, or before you can go forward. And that means, here we are again, we keep coming to this, don't we? Short little meditations, 10, 12, 15, 20, even 30 times a day, in which you stop. You just stop. Stop. No thoughts. No wanting something for this world. All of that is left outside. You step behind the veil. You become a disciple of the infinite. You stand in the invisible. The veil is lifted, if only for a moment, in which you feel the glory you had with the Father before the world was. Blessings, too many to count. In fact, an infinite, eternal number of blessings. Glory to the Father in the highest.